Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir, yeah!
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor. And unfortunately, Gorgon and Cap aren't going to be joining us today, and that is because we have a special episode for you. Today, I am joined by a good friend of mine, Zen. He is going to be from the Listen 3000 podcast. Great podcast, great show. Everyone, go subscribe to them and go check out their show. I was actually fortunate enough to come on their show to nerd out with them a little while ago, almost a couple months ago now. It seems like it was just yesterday. But it was so much fun, and these guys are just so cool. So I had to invite him back, and the reason I invited him here is because we are going to be talking about the new episode of Loki season 2. So both of us here were lucky enough to see the first episode. Zen here saw the first two episodes. I was lucky enough to see him on behalf of a streamer. That's the outlet that I write for. So everyone out there, go check out thestreamer.com. We got reviews. You can check out my comic reviews and my breakdown of Loki episode 1. But besides all of that, Zen, my friend, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me here. I am so excited to nerd out about this with you.
Same here, man. Thank you again for having me, man. I'm excited to talk Loki.
Of course. Well, like I said, we were lucky enough to see the episodes early. And when that happens, the pool of people that you can talk to is very small. So when I saw that you guys saw the episodes, I was like, oh my God, I can talk to somebody about this. So I immediately messaged you and was like, hey man, like, do you want to come on? So this was a very impromptu kind of episode. Again, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it was very short notice. But like I said, I can't contain myself. Everyone out there who's listening and watching knows I love to talk nerd shit. So I needed someone to come on to talk about it. So Zen, let's just get right into it, brother. First episode, at the time of recording this, it premieres tonight. But when you guys are listening and watching this, hopefully you have already seen it. Again, before we start, full spoilers ahead. So if you guys are listening and watching this, we will be getting into spoilers. But Zen, my friend, what did you think of this first episode?
I thought it was great, man. I love how fast-paced it was. It literally picks up right at the end of the finale of the last season. And I loved it, man. It was just so... it felt good to be back in the TVA, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it was great, man. It was great.
Yeah, literally, you said it perfectly. It felt so good to be just back in the TVA and in the world of Loki. And something we just mentioned before we started recording that I really love, and you mentioned it really briefly, is like you said, we just hit the ground running immediately. Like, you could watch the season finale of Loki and the season premiere of season 2 together as like one movie, because it literally, like, it picks up right on the scene that we left. And so for those of you out there who need maybe a refresher, at the end of Loki season 1, the sacred timeline is destroyed, multiverse is alive, and we find Loki in the TVA with a huge statue of Kang, or I guess He Who Remains, depending on who you want to ask. But the other thing I really loved about it was, again, we pick up right where that scene leaves off. And one of the first scenes is like a close-up of the Kang statue and like of his face. And I just really loved that because it just like furthers the point of like Kang looms over everything. And even though, again, spoilers for the episode, Kang, He Who Remains, or another variant of him does not show up in this episode, but his presence is 100% felt throughout the entire episode. Would you agree?
Yes, definitely. That's like the big thing. And Loki is really trying to let everybody know, like, you don't understand. this guy is not to be messed with.
Mm-hmm. And then so that brings us to the first kind of topic of discussion I wanted to talk about with you, and mm-hmm. something that I know is going to cause discussion and or confusion among a lot of fans. So we learn in this episode, like I said, we hop in right where we leave off. And at the end of season 1, Mobius and B-15 and all the other people, they don't know who Loki is. They're like, dude, who are you? Like, what is going on here? And at least for me, and I think a lot of other people thought the same thing, I assumed that he went into like a branch timeline or like an alternate timeline, right? But we learn in this episode that he's actually in the past of the TVA. And this all comes together in what's called in the episode, they call it time slipping. So throughout the episode, we see Loki kind of glitch out and he like disappears. And then, like I said before, we assumed he was going to a branch timeline, but in reality, we find out in this episode that he goes back in time. Now, the reason I want to discuss this, I've been going crazy over this for the past couple of days. Like, I'm talking, I got graphs, I got drawings out. Dude, I've been trying to crack this nut. But Zen, you can answer this for me. Did this confuse you, the time slipping and like the him going back in time?
Yeah, at first I'm right there with you. And I feel like, yeah, like you said, a lot of people were assuming that he was jumping in and out of different timelines when he was time slipping. But the revelation of him going to the past was kind of a big revelation, mm-hmm. especially when we get to, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but like Kihu Kwan and him getting more exposition on what time slipping is and how people didn't think that was possible in the TVA. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's crazy because I feel like it leaves you with more questions. It was like, how long has this been around? Like, it does give you more questions on more about the TVA. Like, what really is this place? You know what I mean?
Yeah, literally. I mean, it just literally opens up a whole new can of worms of kind of how we understood how everything works. And you just mentioned it, which I got to mention because, I mean, highlight of the episode for me, Kihu Kwan, if I'm mispronouncing that name, I sincerely apologize. But man, is he so good. A lot of people know him as Short Round from the Indiana Jones film, but he recently has been having this kind of big resurgence with Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I mean, he is just so like charismatic and like it's just infectious when he's on screen. Like he is just such a fun character. He's going to be playing, his name is, I think, Ouroboros is how you say it. And they mm-hmm. call him OB in the show. But he's going to be the kind of like technical repair guy of the TVA. And like I said, again, highlight of the episode for me. He was just so, so fun.
Yeah, super fun, man. I feel like he was stealing scenes when he was in it. Just his character. It was like, oh, okay, I like this. He's kind of quirky. And I'm like, all right, I like this guy. I like this guy a lot.
Especially when you're sharing a scene with Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston. I mean, to say that he carried the scene, that's a, you know, big statement. And I 100% agree. I think he totally carried those scenes. But speaking of Hiddleston and Wilson, they're just so good together as well. Like, so when you get all three of them together, it's just like, I could sit there in that room for the entire episode and just have them playing off each other. But brings us back to time slipping though. So like I said, he's the Kihu Kwan OB. He is going to be the technical repair guy. And so when Loki starts time slipping, they go to OB and they're like, you know, what's going on? And he basically says, like, that's not possible. And so this is where I'm gonna nerd out on you for a second. So, like I said, I've been trying to crack this nut for a little bit. And so I'm gonna try to explain this as concisely as I possibly can. All right, you ready?
Yes, sir.
So let's go on this journey together. So, like you said, OB says that that should not be possible in the TVA. And we learn from season one that time, from Owen Wilson's character, he says that time works differently in the TVA. They don't really go into like what that necessarily means. But so this is where I'm coming from. And this is why I think Loki is time slipping and why that is possible. So the TVA sits outside of time, right? It's not in the timeline. So it doesn't have a past or a future. It just is. It just exists. So we have our sacred timeline. Here, I'm going to do a graph for y'all. So we have our sacred timeline, right? And from the rules established in Endgame, they say when you go to the past and change something, boom, you create a branch, right? And once that branch is created, that is when the TVA steps in, prunes the branch, and boom, we're back at sacred timeline, okay? You following me here, Zen?
Yeah.
Everybody listening, you following me? Okay, so we're back at sacred timeline. at the end of Loki season one, timeline's broken. Everything's all gone to shit. So that time, which we'll get into also, which is also kind of explained in this episode, all of that is what's powering the TVA. And basically, that is what allows the TVA to sit outside of time. So since the timeline is broken, all of what is powering the TVA is also broken. So that means that time itself can now infiltrate the TVA, and it's starting to affect the TVA, which then creates the possibility for Loki to go to the past. And also, it also explains why when Loki changes something in the past. So for example, people who have watched the episode, the crack on the floor, the reason why that crack is still there in the future is because there's no longer any, everything is a branch. Everything is chaos. So there's no, you, so now, but while before it wasn't possible, now it is possible to change futures from the past because this is all going haywire. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I'm like, man, did you talk to somebody at Marvel? Because like,
bro,
you making it make even more sense. Because I thought saying, I understood it, but like, you even made it even make more sense. So,
dude, yeah, I've been like I bad. Said, I got my graphs out. I talked to my girlfriend. She entertains me, and she knows a decent. I mean, more than your average person, I would say, because she's with me. But I'm literally sitting here explaining this to her. So I'm like, okay, if you get this, then like everyone else will understand this. But so, like I said, that's like a real major part of this episode. And I think, like I said, that is going to be the reason why that's possible now. And in my opinion, at least hopefully I explained it as I'm thinking it in my head, but that doesn't contradict anything in Endgame. The rules of time travel still apply. It's just, everything is fucked now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like I said, that's kind of like, that's my explanation, at least for time slipping. Who knows? I could just be a freaking crazy crackpot theorist. But that also, we were talking about Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston. And speaking of the time slipping, I got to mention, I love the scene of them in the elevator. And he like slips out and he's like, Owen Wilson's like, we have to figure this out because this looks absolutely horrible. And
he's like, that part, he's like, it looks painful. Like,
he's like, it's like you're being born and dying at the same time. He's like, it's awful. Like I said, they're just so much fun together. I could just watch an entire episode of them in a room just bullshitting together.
That has to be one of my favorite parts of what I've seen so far is just their chemistry, man. I feel like they haven't missed a step since they came back from the last season. Literally. And then you're throwing in these new characters and like, it's still like we were talking about Kiwi Kwan's character, their chemistry, everybody's chemistry is just on point. You know what I mean? I feel like it's making this show, like if people have whatever they want to say about the show, but that's one thing that you can't deny. Their chemistry is really great.
Yeah, not only their chemistry, but I would say like the whole cast is just so fucking good. And I want to shout out specifically, which so I watched a couple of these episodes. And like I mentioned, Zen watched two episodes. So it's kind of hard to remember. Things blur together. But from what I remember, B-15 played. I know I'm going to butcher this name so bad, but excuse me, please. But Wunmei Masaku, who plays B-15. I don't think she's in the first episode very much. She's got a little bit to do, but she is so good. Like
she is.
While she's not like one of the main central, like I guess she is. I mean, she was in season one and she carries over to season two, but she's just such a great actor. Like I think like when she's in a scene, like we were talking about carrying a scene, she carries a scene and like she commands the room for sure. I love her character. I really hope that we get to see a lot more of her in this season or future seasons.
Nah, definitely. I know her from the show Lovecraft Country that used to come on HBO a while back. And from the first season, just seeing how she was involved in this and like, oh yeah, they got her from Marvel. Yeah, she's great. And then just seeing her now with this in this new season, and just now that her and Loki and Owen Wilson's character, they're all on the same side now. There's not no real division. I love that we're giving more with these agents and getting to see more of her perspective on what's going on. Because, like, again, like, the show starts, it's chaos. You know what I mean? Like, if people remember how the first season ended, like, time, like you were saying, the timeline is messed up. So, like, the TVA is, they're running around trying to figure out what's going on. So, like, just seeing her perspective and getting her chemistry with them as well, like, it was really cool to see.
Yeah, and I love to I'm as we're talking, I'm like kind of remembering. So the first episode, that's when she has the meeting with like the other judges and whatnot. And I really love how she's like kind of almost like the voice of reason, and not necessarily voice of reason, but like she's so adamant about saving the timelines, the branches, and like we cannot prune the branches. And she even says, I think, something like, you're killing billions of lives by doing this. And I just, she's just such a great actress. I think the performance made that scene feel a lot more impactful as well. But like, again, I just really love how from in season one, we see her kind of go through this journey of being just, you know, your average Minutemen, and she gets the vision from Sylvie, and like sees, like you see that kind of progression to, so to now see her in the beginning of this season fully realize what the t what's going on and fighting actively against that. I really love that. And like I said, she's just such a good actress. She just carries the room, and I that scene is just so good. But I also want to talk about, so we talked about time slipping, but another major part of this episode and kind of where the episode leaves us is with what's called the time, the, or not time loom, the temporal loom. So that's going to be another major thing of this episode. And so basically what the temporal loom is, as described by OB, again, shout out Kyu Hu Kwan, amazing. But so he describes the temporal loom as it is the heart of the TVA. And he says that the temporal loom is where raw time is refined into physical timeline. And the temporal loom is overloading, trying to weave together so many branches from when the timeline got destroyed. So again, Zen, I want to get your thoughts on this as not the, I know you read comics here and there, but I wouldn't consider you the, you know, Kang the Conqueror expert, if you would. So from your perspective, what did you think about the temporal loom and like how they explained that for this episode?
I thought that was an interesting concept, especially seeing it visually. You get to see like this. I don't know what you would call it. Maybe like a like some type of, I don't know, look like a clamp or something like that. Like that, like on the timeline. And like now that the timeline's messed up, it's like it's hard to for everything to fit through this and stream, because it basically it looked like a streamline and trying to streamline everything into one, you know, the sacred timeline. So seeing that and figuring out, okay, so this is how the TVA is powered, and this is what's going on, this is why everything's kind of in disarray. I thought that was very interesting, and it was a lot. I won't lie, but like I love all this lore that they're setting up and all this exposition that they're giving you to kind of really flesh out this world. Like this section of the MCU is really interesting, you know what I mean? And seeing the effects on everything else is really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of one of the things I was a little worried about. I mean, not worried about. I think they did a really good job with introducing us to this information, but this episode is kind of an information dump. And like we get a lot, like I said, time slipping. We have the temporal loom. And not only that, but I mean, just the nature of the TVA itself is confusing. Like even from season one, like it's just a confusing concept. So, like I said, watching these episodes, I was a little worried for your average watcher or like someone who hasn't read, you know, 1,000 comics about the TVA and shit, how they would digest the information. So I'm glad to hear that it was pretty easily digestible. But I want to talk about, like, so again, going back to the whole time slipping thing and what I was talking about earlier. So the time loom, or I keep calling it the fucking time loom, temporal time, chronological time. I mean, there's so much crap going on here. But so, as I was explaining with the time slipping, so this explain in my mind, this explains why that's happening. Is so like OB explains, the temporal loom is overloading, trying to weave together all of these new branches. So since that is happening, that's what's causing the inconsistencies of time at the TVA. And like I said, basically allowing time to start coming into the TVA, a place that is supposed to sit outside of time. And so, again, this is where I'm going to nerd out on you for a little bit, Zen, and for our listeners and watchers out there. So for the comic side of this, so there's not a temporal loom in the comics, but we do have something similar, and that is going to be called the Heart of Forever. And so in the comics, the Heart of Forever, let me see here. I got it. I got to write this shit down, dude. Like I said, there's I feel like a physicist over here. Like, other people getting ready for their show, they're reading comics. I'm looking up like time travel theory and shit.
So, I love it, man.
So the Heart of Forever. So in the comics, the Heart of Forever, it is a transcronal engine that enables Chronopolis to exist in every branch of the time stream simultaneously. So for those out there who don't know what Chronopolis is basically Kang's domain. It's Kang City. So in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, a lot of people assumed that city in the quantum realm was Chronopolis. And season one of Loki, when we were in the void, a lot of people assumed that was Chronopolis. Because in the comics, Chronopolis, again, is Kang's stronghold, but he like takes things from all different areas of time, and he'll have a Sphinx there and a Ferrari or something like that. So a lot of people thought it was the void, because in the void we have all these different things. But I, now that we're getting into the second season, I think Chronopolis is the MCU, or the TVA is the MCU version of Chronopolis, and the TVA is his kind of city or domain. And so I think that in the MCU, this temporal loom is playing the same part as the Heart of Forever does in the comics. And again, basically what it does, and kind of what they explain in this episode, is the temporal loom allows the TVA to exist not only outside of time, but it exists in every branch of time simultaneously. So like wherever there's a timeline, a TVA is there. And so, like I said, that's going to be the kind of comic knowledge coming from it. And I think that's really what they're basing all of the kind of TVA stuff and this temporal loom. That's where it's going to be coming from. And again, Kang looms very heavily over this episode. And we learned that in season one that he created the TVA, but I feel like that's a point that they're really trying to hammer home in this season, right?
Yeah, definitely. I got a question for you real quick, man.
Dude, hit me. Bro. Hit me with the question. Yeah. That's another reason why we're here, man.
So looking at, I remember the scene when in the first season where almost in Mobius character shows Loki, I guess, like the full TVA. They look out that window and they see all these things. Because I don't think we've seen the full TVA.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, because I remember he even said in that scene, he mentioned something about there being a nightmare section of the TVA, like something about nightmares and things of that, dreams and something in that nature. I'm wondering if we will get something more discovery of like what else is there. Cause it looks like a city, like you're saying, like the Chronopolis situation, like it does, like when they looked out that window, it looked like it wasn't just this area that we've been in for this, you know, for the last season and for this episode.
It's not just one building.
Right. It seems like it's a lot more there that we haven't got to explore yet. So I'm just wondering, will we get to that point where we explore other areas of the TVA that aren't necessarily just dealing with time? You know what I mean? So yeah, that just had me thinking. You bringing it back. I'm like, I don't remember that part.
That's a great question, dude. And honestly, I don't have an answer for you, but I hope so. I really do. Like you said, while we see the TVA, like you said, in the first season, we see Loki kind of look out, and we even kind of get an almost recreation of that scene in this episode. Yeah. But that's a very great point, though. It feels like we've been in just one building of the TVA this entire time. But like you said there, I mean, I guess you could kind of explain it like when they go in that elevator, like it could, you know, take them, whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
From like a visual standpoint, from an audience standpoint, it seems like we're just in one building. So I think that would be great. I would love for them to kind of show them exploring other aspects of the TVA. And like I said, kind of maybe showing them physically traveling to another building? Because I mean, we see like ships and stuff flying around too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, who's driving those? And like, can on one of those or what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that's a great point. I would love to see more of the TVA. I mean, like you said, it's a huge place, and it's a place that, like we talked about, it exists outside of time, and who knows what other stuff they, I mean, we just found Ouroboros down in, I mean, what did they say in the episode? Owen Wilson's character, he hadn't seen him for 400 years or whatever.
Yeah, right.
He comes down there and he's like, how long has it been? He's like, he's like 400 years.
I find it interesting with Obi's character that he can actually recognize the fact that time has passed. Mm-hmm. When Mobius couldn't, like, he was like, oh, it's been like 400 years since the last time I seen you. And you know, Mobius had no clue of that at all. Like, he was like, oh, yeah. He kind of was like, you know, BSing his way through that conversation, kind of like, mm-hmm. Obi, you know what I mean? Like, so I do find it interesting. I hope we learn more about Obi as well. Like, because why is he able to do that and what's his character is not? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, Obi is 100% a very interesting character. And I think, Not any nefarious intentions. I don't think he's a bad guy or anything. Like, I'll die for Obi. Okay. So, I will never go against Obi. But something that I will leave you with and to kind of ponder over, something that I've been pondering over is, so in this episode, when we meet Obi and they're going to the temporal loom, he talks about something called the TVA guidebook. And so he describes the TVA guidebook is a detailed index of every mechanical classification and maintenance routine in each sector and on each device and inside every computer program of the TVA. So basically, it is a guide of every technological thing. So that includes temp pads, that includes a temporal loom, that includes Miss Minutes, everything. And we learn in this episode that OB is the one who wrote that. So I find that fact very interesting, is all I'm going to say. So I think that I think OB has a bigger part to play than just the kind of comic relief mad scientist guy. But again, I don't think it's nefarious. I think he's a good guy. But like I said, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that could mean nothing. But I just, like I said, from watching this first episode and, you know, trying to eagle eye all the stuff I could, I found that pretty interesting that he's the one who wrote that book.
Definitely same, man. You got me thinking. I'm like, all right, Obi, what more else do you really know? You know what I mean? Because, like, that's a big overtaking. Because I remember, what's the guy's name? Casey, another worker at the TVA, when he finally meets Obi and he's looking, he's like, oh, you wrote the book? Can you sign my book? Like,
it's like a celebrity.
So he's kind of exactly. Mm-hmm. TVA. So like, I found that very, very interesting that he's the guy who wrote the book on the TVA. So like,
literally,
I hope we find. I agree with you. I really do hope we find more about his character and what brought him to this place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like I said, I just love him so much that give me an OB. What's it called? Sideshow, a spinoff show. I would love, like, kind of like the Groot shorts, and just have it be him just like fixing benign things in the TVA, like someone's temp pad, or, you know, Casey has a virus on his computer or something. I would love that.
They should do that in the style. Have you seen those little animation clips that the Loki account has been posting? Like, it'd be like Miss Menace talking about stuff.
No,
it's like
I haven't.
A specific animation style. I guess they showed us the same animation style in season one when they broke down the multiversal war.
Yeah.
Like, that would be cool to see him in that animation style and him doing little mundane things.
Oh, man, I would love
stuff. That would be cool.
Dude, you could have that, just brought an idea. You could have it be like he's given like a TVA like PSA, but it's like him in the cartoon thing. And it's like, oh, you're having problems with your temp pad? Like, that would be so good. And just do like a bunch of little shorts of that. I would love that. But another person we have to talk about, I wanted to talk about really quickly, is Renslayer. So another character who doesn't show up in this episode, but has a pretty significant, I don't want to say role, revelation in this episode. Mm-hmm. So when Loki is time. Oh, and before we get into this really quickly, just for people who may need a refresher, Renslayer, she was the judge from Loki season one. So she used to be a Minuteman agent. She worked her way up to judge. And then she is going to be the one who actually pruned Sylvie's timeline. And if you guys remember, they have some deep beef together. So like I said, Renslayer doesn't show up in this episode. But what's very interesting is we get when Loki is time slipping through the TVA, he ends up in the past in the judge's office. And when he's there, he finds a recording, and the recording is left from He Who Remains. And in this recording, he says, Ravonna Renslayer, you are quite a marvel. I will be proud to lead with you. You made a difference in this war. Thank you for being on my team. And then they end it with, for us, for all time, always. And that scene, dude, what I was like, what? Like, I was just like, so again, coming from the comic side, people who read the comics and are familiar with Kang comics know Ravonna Renslayer is very important to Kang. And Ravonna Renslayer is basically Kang's the love of his life and is actually one of the catalysts for him going on his kind of multiversal conquest. And I won't get too much into it, but again, just know that in the comics, that's like his great love. So us coming from the comic side, we always knew that Ravonna was going to play a bigger role in this than just being a TVA judge. I mean, there's hundreds of judges in the TVA. Like, why pick her, you know? So we knew as soon as she was in the show, like, she's going to play a big role. But here we kind of see that come to fruition. And we learn that not only is Ravonna involved with He Who Remains and, you know, loyal to his plan, but she was actually there for the creation of the TVA itself, which I think is freaking madness. And what'd you think about this then when you saw this scene?
Yeah, I remember that part, and it caught me off guard when I seen it. I'm like, dang, so like she's really a bigger part of it. I am knowledgeable on the Kang and Ravonna relationship from the comics. So like I also knew, like, all right, she's going to be, I'm just waiting to see how she's going to be have a bigger role to play with him going forward within this saga in the MCU. So getting that little tidbit of information and learning how they're tracking her, trying to figure out where she is. And like, I find that very interesting, man. And I'm excited to see where that goes, because we know something crazy is going to happen with her. So I mean, it's just all a matter of time, you know?
Yeah. And I'm curious too, to know like how much of this she knows.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Obviously, in the first season, she is very loyal to He Who Remains, but she doesn't go into any of like at least from my memory of season one, she doesn't even know who He Who Remains is. All she knows is like, this is my job and I'm doing my job. And like all this other shit, like, I don't care about this shit. I have a job to do. And like, that's what it is. And so after hearing this recording, I'm very curious, was that maybe more than we initially thought in season one? Like, maybe she has more, she knows more of He Who Remains than she was letting on. You get what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a crazy revelation, especially seeing the interaction between her and Ms. Minutes at the end of season one, when she gives her like information on He Who Remains and where to go now, since everything is kind of messed up. It's because I remember her, that last conversation with her, Mobius, it was like, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to find free will. So like,
oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Right. So, I'm just really curious. Yeah. Like, did she know more or now? Like, oh man, you got me breaking my brain now, man.
Cause you're rocking my brain. Cause like I said, I forgot that happened.
Now I'm thinking now too, like, now that we can kind of jump to the past and the future of the TVA, I'm wondering like, how far back was that recording even done?
Yes, that's, you know, also, I mean, a very, like, good question.
Yeah, like, was that done when she went at the, you know, in between time, like when she jumped out through that door, or was that way, way years ago when the TVA was first created? And you know what I mean? Like, I'm really curious on, and knowing a little bit about their backstory in the comic books, I'm just wondering, like, what does she know she was something before that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. That's my question. Yeah. And I mean, also learn in this episode that Kang, He Who Remains, Kang, he has wiped the TVA's memory multiple times. So mm-hmm. he could have wiped her memory. So I think that's the major question is,
yeah,
does she know more, or is her mind wiped like everyone else in the TVA? So like Mobius, for example, like we mentioned, when Loki's time slipping, he goes in the past, but Mobius is there. And so is B-15, and the Kang statue is literally sitting right behind them. So there was a point in the TVA history where Mobius and B-15 and all the other Minutemen knew who Kang was, or He Who Remains. So that's another question I kind of have, is what happened for He Who Remains to wipe all of their memories? Was that just like, it's been a year, gotta wipe them, you know? Or was it like something happened where he wiped their memories and then came up with the timekeepers? Because that's another question that I have, is where did the timekeepers come from? Like, okay, yes, we know that He Who Remains invented the idea of timekeepers for the TVA. So like, you know, just like, oh yeah, don't question it, it's the time gods. But like I just said, we know that at one point the TVA knew that He Who Remains, like I said, there's statues of him everywhere. So mm-hmm. what happened for him to then wipe everyone's memory and then create this myth of the timekeepers?
Definitely a good question. A good question. Cause it's like, it felt like he went through a lot for that. Cause it's like, it's this whole thing. Like they were these robotic beings.
I was saying, he's got robots of them and shit.
They have a whole cartoon breaking down that the timekeepers came and saved everything. So I'm very interested to see why that came about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, very interested to see. I don't know, man. Maybe people were questioning him as, oh, you're just a man, so like, why do you know? You know what I mean? I'm just
true. You know, ooh, I like that.
But like, that could be a reason and why. But I'm really interested to see though the real reason why. You know.
Well, I've been thinking, which I'm not as married to this theory as I once was, but I've long held the belief ever since season one that the timekeepers are real. That while the timekeepers of the TVA that Kang led us to believe, they are not real, I do think that there still are timekeepers out there. And whether Kang has killed them or I'm not sure, but I feel like they existed. Like they are real beings in my mind. And so going back to what we're talking about with all this, I'm very interested to see if that comes back in this new season. Like if we get more timekeeper stuff and if they mention them more, because like I said, it just seems weird to me. Like Kang just came up with this, you know what I mean? It's like, there's more there, you know, I feel like there has to be more there. So I'm very interested to see, like I said, if we get more talk of the timekeepers. Because I mean, in this first episode, we get the head on the table, which was pretty damn cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I think the timekeepers are out there, whether they're still alive or, like I said, Kang killed them in order to take their place. Because so in the comics, again, coming from the comic side, the timekeepers appoint Kang, or the variant of Kang that we're talking about, his name is Immortus. And that's basically who He Who Remains is kind of based off of a little bit. They're still different. But basically in the comics, the timekeepers appoint Kang or He Who Remains to this position and like give sort similarly to how He Who Remains offered it to Sylvie. And he offered like, hey, you run the shit. That's basically what the timekeepers did to Immortus. And that's when he started overseeing all of time. So again, if they're kind of playing around with the timekeepers, I feel like there's got to be more there than that. They were just something He Who Remains just magically made up.
I'm thinking even still, they could be a representation of like three different versions of Kangs that actually ran the TVA at one point. Because if you remember when in this episode, when Loki prunes the wall, when they're in the war room and he prunes the wall to see the Kang things on the wall, I think it was three faces, if I'm not mistaken.
Bruh, dude, that's a good ass catch. I didn't even think of that. That is a great catch, Zen. Holy shit. That is great. I didn't even think of that. When I first saw it, maybe this sounds stupid. I'm just thinking it's just like Gang, you know, like kind of like echoing almost.
Right.
But nah, bro, I think there was three faces, and three faces, three timekeepers.
I'm thinking, man, maybe that's where he got it from. Maybe he just didn't want to make it himself. So he created these characters, but like I really think that might have something to do with it as well. I'm hoping we find that out though.
Yeah.
It's so many questions, man. So many questions.
So many. It's gonna be so fun going down the rabbit hole this season and like discussing all of this stuff. Let's talk about the end credit scene. So we get one end credit scene. There's not really much here, but I mean, there's stuff that we can, you know, definitely speculate on. So end credit scene, we see Sylvie and she pops up in Oklahoma, and on the, it gives you a little like a location, I guess you could say, a little title on there. And so it specifies that it is in a branch timeline. So it's not on the sacred timeline. And she basically just winds up at a McDonald's and she hops in and they're like, oh, what do you want? And what's interesting, though, about this scene and something that I think we can talk about is, so they ask her what she wants and she kind of looks around and she just sees all these people just like eating their food, like, you know, a guy and his girlfriend, a mom and her kids or whatever. And as she's looking around, she says, I want everything. And or so something along those lines, like I want to try, or I think she says, I want to try everything.
Everything.
And so what, again, there's not really, and that just kind of ends there. So there's not really like a huge, like, oh my God. But what I think is very interesting is like, so her journey throughout season one, and then now we pick up now in season two. So again, for those out there who don't know, if you're watching this, you should know, but Sylvie is a Loki variant. And when she was a little kid, her timeline got pruned. And so she was brought into the TVA, just like Loki was in season one. And I forget exactly how it went down, but basically she escapes the TVA's imprisonment. And she basically lived her life jumping from timeline to timeline in hiding of the TVA. So really, she never got to live a life, or at least a relatively normal life. So the way I read this scene was she's looking around, she sees all these people just happy and just like living a normal life. And that's why she says, I want to try everything. Cause like, she's like, this is my time to have a life now. And like, I, you know, I killed He Who Remains. I did what I was supposed to do. The TVA is done. Now I'm going to chill here at McDonald's and, you know, just fucking live my life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But how did you read that scene?
Nah, I agree with you totally on that. It seems like now that she's kind of did everything, it reminds me of the Thanos moment when he sat back at the farm. It's like, all right, everything work is done.
Literally,
but it's but it's like, her wanting to go and live the life that she couldn't live. You were saying how she jumped around timelines. Not only was she jumping around timelines, she was jumping around to like the end of a lot of time. Like that's how she stayed under the radar of the TVA. So that must have been pretty traumatizing for a while. You know what I mean? Like her doing that. So for her to finally get a chance to like sit back and kind of enjoy the life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's very interesting. It kind of gives you the motivation for her going forward in this season, you know what I mean? And and you kind of can compartmentalize that and kind of be like, all right, so that's why she's doing what she's doing, or that's why she kind of, you know, got out the way, because she's just trying to live now, you know?
Yeah, literally. And I mean, she deserves it, man. I love Sylvie, and I love I love the whole, I think something from season one that a lot of people didn't understand or just didn't care to understand is I really, really love the whole kind of theme of like Loki and Sylvie together, and like how that parallels like loving yourself and like self-love and being able to accept yourself and love yourself. I think that that's just such a great thematic concept to play with, and especially with two characters like that. It just, I really love that. And I think that's something, like I said, a lot of people kind of overlooked or didn't really understand.
You were cooking with that, because I definitely didn't really deeply think about that, but you're absolutely right.
I mean, they're this, I mean, again, Sylvie is a Loki. Like she's a female Loki, but she is a Loki. In my mind, the way that I read that is like him loving Sylvie is also him loving himself. And we know that that for a Loki, not even just our Loki, any Loki, that is like kind of the crux of all of their problems is, you know, he is a frost giant raised by Asgardians, and he's the second son of Odin and lives in Thor's shadow. And, you know, is he an Asgardian? Is he a frost giant? Like, he cannot accept who he is or love himself as he is, which causes him to, you know, take over New York and all this crazy shit. So
talk about acting out, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Talk. My man's needs therapy for sure. But yeah, like I said, to me, it all comes back to like him loving Sylvie is him loving himself and kind of coming to that realization. And as we're talking about this, it also reminded me of something that I think is really cool of this episode. Is even in just that quick little, it's not even maybe a minute end credit scene with Sylvie. To me, I really thought what was cool is I feel like it really hammers home the season finale of Loki. And what I mean by that is so when they're in the room with He Who Remains, Sylvie and Loki have a very intimate discussion about like, should we do this? Sylvie is like, we have to kill him, you know, and whatever. But Loki is more on the side of like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, what if he's right? What if we kill him and it makes things worse? But Sylvie ultimately does not listen to his reasoning, kicks him through the time door, and she kills him. So what I think is interesting, and I think they played off really well in this episode, is we see Loki like freaking out and like really struggling with the decision that Sylvie made. There's a quick little scene with him and Mobius, which I really love, where Hiddleston is just like, he's like, we were at the end of time. He's like explaining what happened to Mobius, and he's like frantic, and he's like, he was at the end of time, and then he said that if we kill him, more variants are coming, and then Sylvie killed him, but maybe he was lying, but maybe he was telling the truth. Like, he's like, he doesn't know what the fuck to think. Like, he's just freaking mm-hmm. out. But I love when we flash forward to Sylvie in McDonald's, she's content with the decision she made. And she firmly believes that she made the right decision. So I think it's a very cool kind of thematic play on that last episode of, like I said, Loki is unsure of that decision, but Sylvie is sure of that. And we see the kind of ramifications of that, which I, like I said, thought was really cool.
That's a very interesting way to put it, because I'm thinking about that. You're right with that, with her being content in the decision that she made. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me, it's crazy that she really didn't think about the ramifications of that, because like, really, what if he was telling the truth? I mean, obviously we know he was, but like, it's just wild to me, because her life was so difficult, you know what I mean? Jumping mm-hmm. from timeline to timeline to timeline, only finding out that this guy is the reason that all the, you know, the pain in your life is existed, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I can see that, but it is crazy. It is crazy. Definitely informs why she did the thing she did though.
Oh, 100%. And I think she's for sure justified, because in her mind, like we just talked about the life that she's lived, she knows that that happens to every pruned timeline. Every branch that gets pruned, that's what happens to them. So mm-hmm. in the way that I read it, I think that the reason she's content with her decision is because she doesn't know what happens afterwards, but she, mm-hmm. in her mind, it's better than what was before. And
exactly.
like whether or not shit hits the fan after she kills He Who Remains, in her mind, that's better than what's been happening under He Who Remains. But I think Loki is coming at it from a more kind of logical stance of like, mm-hmm. we just don't know what could happen. But again, Loki hasn't lived the life Sylvie has. So he almost doesn't understand it the way that Sylvie does. And I think that neither of them are right or wrong. Like the depending on how you look at it, both mm-hmm. could be right. You know what I mean?
That's right. All about perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing I really loved about this episode and that scene in particular that we were just talking about. But again, not only is Kang's presence very felt throughout the episode, but I think that the crux of that decision from the finale of season one hinges on this episode heavily and looms over the episode. And it's making us as the audience question, just like Loki is in the episode, did Sylvie do the right thing? Or did she fuck everything up, you know what I mean?
I'm really curious to see, like, later in the season, because we all know going into the season, this did mess a lot of things up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a Secret Wars coming.
Yeah.
So because of this decision, I'm wondering how she's going to feel when she kind of gets the scope of now what's happening after that decision that she made. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm very curious to, like, see, is it going to be remorse? Is there going to be like, oh, now I have to fix this? Or is it kind of going to be like more, you know, I did what I had to do. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm curious to see her reaction to her finally, you know, realizing the scope of actually what her decision was, you know?
Yeah, the consequences of her decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes.
And that's what I think this whole, I mean, just from this first episode, I feel like that's kind of the theme that this season is playing off of, is consequences. Like, what were the consequences of the decisions made in season one? And like,
exactly.
The consequences of all of our characters, that includes Mobius, his decision to stay in the TVA after he knows that he's a variant. B-15, her decision to actively not prune the branches. I think all of these come back to consequences and dealing with the consequences that were laid out from season one. And I think too, we're talking about all this Sylvie and stuff and like her decision. I think that a big part of it is kind of just like, it comes down to like the ethical question of, is it better to live under the rule of someone or to have your own free decisions? Even if those decisions are bad, even if those decisions lead to bad things, I think it comes back, it's more of an ethical question of like, you know, which do you think is better? Is it better to live a maybe more comfortable life, but everything is controlled and decided for you? Or would you rather live a life where you make your own decisions, but those decisions could be terrible? They could be very bad.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it goes back down. You're right. It's all perspective, man. Because it's like, on one hand, you can be like, well, at least you got to make the decision for yourself.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And sometimes for some people, that's the biggest point of it all. You know, whether it's good or bad, it's like, at least you got to make that decision for yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I could talk to you about this all freaking day long, my man. I mean, we could sit here for another hour and just keep going on it. But before we get out of here and before we wrap this up, I wanted to ask, do you got any other questions for me? Or is there anything in the episode that, you know, stood out to you that we didn't talk about yet?
Well, one thing I do want to bring in, this kind of probably will, you know, carry over for the whole season. Mm-hmm. Man, the production design, like the way things look in the TVA, it feels like we did get to explore more of the TVA this time. But the way everything looks, the feel of the TVA really brought you back to this show again. And I just wanted to highlight that because I haven't seen too many people talking about that. But like from the way people dress to the technology all around you in the TVA, it all looks so cool and very unique and distinct to this area of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I just wanted to highlight that part of it because
I
love that about this show, that it's very unique in its style. You know what I mean? And it feels like they were probably in sets and location. It didn't really feel super volume like.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they were actually on sets and were able to touch and feel these things around in an actual TVA, you know what I mean? So I thought that was really cool. That's one thing I always notice about this show. And I noticed again when I got to see this episode.
Yeah, 100%. I 100% agree. The set designs in the TVA are so, so good. And I love how it's like, almost kind of like Star Wars in a sense of where like they have like very advanced technology, but it's all like, it looks old school, like very analog and everything. I think that's such a creative design choice. And like you said, all the sets and like the TVA uniforms, I think it really sets it apart from the other Marvel shows, like just the aesthetic of the series.
Definitely. I'm trying to think of anything else, man, that stood out for me.
Well, that
show,
reminded
man.
Me just really quickly. We're talking about the aesthetic of the show. Something that I noticed that I 100% purposeful. You will not convince me this was an accident. But when when Mobius, Loki, and OB go into the temporal loom for the first time, the door that opens to the temporal loom, 100% an X-Men nod. For sure, 100%. Not only is there an X literally right in the center of the door, but I'm going to challenge all you guys out there. Go look this up on YouTube. So from that first X-Men movie, when the first time that they enter Cerebro, which is the machine that Charles Xavier uses to find all the mutants, the door is almost exactly the same. I mean, different color scheme, but it's, you know, the X is there. But what I'm talking about is the way that it opens. So in the shot, they show it from inside. So the door opens and then Loki and them are standing there on the other side of the door.
Yeah.
That, it's literally like shot for shot, almost the exact same from the X-Men movie when they first enter Cerebro. And like even the way that the X like opens up. And I want to even say they use the same sound bite, like the door
open. They might have, man.
Bro, I think, like, again.
I didn't notice that this time. I'm going to have to watch it again and pay attention to that part.
Dude,
because
tonight,
honestly,
Noah Feige,
you might be absolutely right.
Dude, I know how
he loves the X-Men. He might have just threw that in there just to throw it in there.
And when I say this, I don't mean like, oh, they threw this in there because X-Men are showing up in this series. No, not at all. X-Men have nothing to do with this. I think it's just a fun little nod that they threw in there just to be like, hey, they're coming. Just remember, they're coming. You know what I mean? Just something in there. But again, I challenge all you guys, when you watch the episode tonight or after you watch it, pay attention to that door. Go back, watch. You don't gotta watch the whole movie. I won't do that to y'all. But just watch that scene of them going into Cerebro, and it is like, again, shot for shot the same.
But I got one last question for you, man.
Hit me, dude. Hit me.
Time slipping.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a concept that will be brought up later in the MCU? Now that we're dealing with time and dealing with more multiversal things, do you think we might see more of that concept seen with other people?
I think it's an interesting idea for sure. I think it all depends on if the temporal loom gets fixed.
Gotcha.
If they end up fixing that, then I think everything goes back to same. But the question I think that spawns from that for me is it all depends on how this temporal loom is affecting the other timelines. So we're seeing, so what I'm getting at is this is how it's affecting the TVA. Does that translate to, so that's an interesting question. So again, we're at, you know, sacred timeline. We have all of our branches, right? But now that the branches are just going wild, how does that, so if someone goes back in time, they create a new branch, but there's millions of branches. So what happens when a branch person makes a branch? You get what I mean? So.
Ooh.
I have to draw up some more graphs for that one.
Because I'm wondering, do we in this episode find out why Loki in particular is time slipping?
Bro, no.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know why he is in particular time slipping.
That's a great, great question. The only thing I can think is it would have to have something to do with him being at the Citadel. So since he was at the Citadel, which sits at the end of time, when he was pushed through the time door, again, maybe, I don't know, one of the rationale I can think of is since he was at the Citadel, that did something to him, which when he was pushed through the time door, messes with his place in time. Does that make sense? So it's explained in the TVA, and I want to say in season one they explain this, but like everyone has their place in time, right? For most people, it's on the sacred timeline, but when you go on a branch, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think the way I would rationalize it is when he was in the Citadel and the explosion happened that created the multiverse, that scrambled where this variant of Loki should be in the time stream. So like before, he should have been in the TVA or just not existed at all because he's a variant. But now that everything has gone to shit and the time, again, time is infiltrating the TVA, his place in that is all out of whack. That's how I would describe that or rationalize it.
I'm thinking, I'm also wondering, so I wonder if that we seen Sylvia at the very end of the post-credit scene. Mm-hmm. She wasn't time-slipping at all. I'm wondering if that has something to do with the fact that he went back to the TVA and she didn't.
That's what I'm getting at. Or so like also, we were talking about, how does this time affect the branches? So maybe mm-hmm. that's why Sylvie isn't time slipping, because mm-hmm. she's in a branch. But if she were to go to the TVA at the time when the loom is going crazy, she maybe start time slipping as well.
Doing the same thing. Cool.
Or I see, this is what I'm saying. So fucking confused. Yeah. Because it's like, or it could not affect her because she is the new He Who Remains. She, like, by killing He Who Remains, she is now the new god of the TVA, whether she wants it or not. She's still in that position. So maybe that makes it different for her, because she kind of has, I guess you could say, more power than Loki right now. Because, like I said, whether she's sitting at the Citadel or not, she's still in charge.
Right. That's an interesting concept, man. And I hope we learn more about that as we go forward. Because
I know. I can't wait.
I still got so many questions. So
hell yeah. Well, I mean, you got questions, bro. Hopefully I'll have some answers, and we'll link back up and do this again for some other episodes, because this was super fun. Man.
Yeah, it definitely was, man. Thank you again for having me.
Of course, dude. Like I said, thank you for coming out. Everyone out there knows I love talking about nerd shit. So any opportunity to do it, I'm freaking there. I'm just, like I said, so thankful that you were able to accommodate me and do this on such a short notice. But yeah, dude, we definitely have to do this again. And maybe we'll do a whole Loki after show.
Hey, man, let me know, man. I'm here.
Let's do it, brother. All right. Well, hey, before we get out of here, Zen, please plug yourself, my man. Like I said, Listen 3000, that's going to be the podcast. But tell the people out there, where can they find you, all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. You can find me online. Same at everywhere, at ArmyZen, Army Z-E-N-N. And definitely follow Listen 3000 on all socials. You can check us out on anywhere you get your podcasts at. And check us out on YouTube as well. It's Listen 3000, Listen 3000. And yeah, man, again, thank you to Fed Thor for letting me come on here and talk Loki, man. I'm so excited for the season, and I'm excited to see everybody else's reaction to what we've seen so far.
Yes, absolutely. Please, if you guys have watched, stuck with us through this whole episode, leave us a comment with some questions maybe you have, something that we can talk about on other episodes. Also, if you like this, make sure to like and subscribe. I am going to be putting all the links for Listen 3000 and Zen and all that in the description below. So again, please go down there, check them out, subscribe to their channel. They're great. But I think for this first episode, at least, that's all we're going to have for you. Like, again, leave us your questions and comments down below. I hope you all stay hydrated. I hope all your stacks are fat. And I guess I'll just end it off with, for all time, always, baby.
For all time, always.